out will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big pecker. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we are going to have an interview with Mr. Vinny Galante. And if you're familiar with bodybuilding at all, you know the name Vinny Galante because he's been around for decades. He is now, I believe, like 53, I think, or 54 years old. And Vinny is still competing. He's competing as a professional bodybuilder in the Masters division or sometimes the 212 division. And he's in great shape. And that's what we're going to talk about on our interview today is we're not only going to talk about his career when he started training as a teenager, but how he's adapted his training to look his best ever at 53 years old or 54. I can't remember which age he is, but Vinny is in his mid-50s and he's still looking ripped and he's still very competitive. And most of all, he's excited about competing. So it's going to be a really, really good interview with Vinny Galante. All right. Before we get to our interview with Vinny, I do want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. Their certified and knowledgeable staff will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number out here in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. And if you tell them you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, they'll give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll also give you 20% off your first order. All right. Before we get to our emails from last week's show, which was our Rick Drayson tribute that we did with Jerry Branum and Bill Grant, I want to announce, and I'm really excited to do this, the winners of the Summer Fitness Challenge. So if you've been listening to the show at all, you know that this was the second fitness challenge that I've done this year in 2020. We did our first one in January, and it lasts 12 weeks. And then I started another one at the beginning of the summer, and it just ended on Labor Day, which was last Monday. And so now we have the results. So I want to mention them on the air. I have not sent out an email or anything, so this is brand new. So our first place winner is Mr. Amato Raquina. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Amato. His after picture, he's not super shredded like our winner for the last fitness challenge we had. But Amato went from a beginning weight, and this was on January 15th, of 228 pounds. He got down to 204 pounds, and his waist went from 44 inches to 38 and a half inches. So I'm going to put these pictures up on my website, johnhansenfitness.com. I want you guys to check these out. It's amazing. The progress that Amato made. I mean, he's like a whole different person. So what I had these guys do was when they signed up for the fitness challenge, they filled out a questionnaire and told me a little bit about themselves, how long they've been training, if they're working out now, what kind of workouts are they doing, and what are their measurements right now, what's their diet look like. And so what I did to begin with was I fixed up their diet, and then I fixed up their training program. And then every week they would send me updates, and they would let me know what their weight was, what their waist was, if their waist was going down. And then I would write up new workouts for them every week. And we did this for 12 weeks straight. And then they sent me pictures at the beginning on week number one. And then on week number four, week number eight, and then finally week number 12, they sent me updated pictures so I could see the progress they were making. And whoever made the most progress and whoever pictures looked the best from before to after, those were the guys I chose as the winners. So Amato gets first place. He's going to get $200 in free supplements from Old School Labs, and he's going to get all of my DVDs and books. So I've got three books out. I'll send all three to Amato, and then he's also going to get my two DVDs. So congratulations to Amato. I know he worked very hard, and this is a challenging year for everybody because of this COVID-19. A lot of people can't work out. and it was still going on over the summer. So I congratulate all these guys for really just getting through and making the progress. And I think every one of our competitors, just about every one of them, was really active with sending me their updates this time. And it was really, really a great contest. So congratulations to everybody that completed all 12 weeks. I think it was about everybody who signed up completed it. I think we might have one guy drop out. That was about it. All right. Second place goes to Mark Johnson. Now, Mark started off, he was a smaller guy, only 155 pounds, and he went down to 140 pounds. But again, his before and after pictures are amazing. He actually put on muscle as he was losing fat, and his waist went from 36 and a quarter inches to 30 and three quarter inches. So he lost a lot of body fat and he added muscle while he did it. And we were going over his workouts every week, and I noticed Mark was getting stronger and stronger each week. So he was definitely putting on muscle, because his strength wouldn't be going up if that was what was happening. So congratulations to Mark. Mark is also one of our Patreon donors. So I want to thank him also for that, because he supports the show every month by offering a little donation. So thank you to Mark for that. And congratulations. He was really excited about doing this challenge. He said it was really motivated him and going to keep going with it. So great job to Mark. And Mark is going to get $150 worth of free supplements from Old School Labs. And he will also get one of my DVDs and two of my books. So congratulations. And then finally, our third place winner is Caleb Mastin. So Caleb also made some great changes from before to after. He started off at 260 pounds, and he went down to 245 pounds. And his waist, check this out, went from 49 inches all the way down to 42 inches. The guy lost 7 inches off his waist in only 12 weeks. That's amazing. It's like an inch every 2 weeks. So congratulations to Caleb. He made some amazing progress. And again, great workouts he was doing over the 12-week period. His strength was going up, and he stuck with it, and he really made some great changes, and you're going to really see the difference when you check out these before and after pictures, which are going to be up, as I said, on my website, johnhensonfitness.com. So if you go there this week, I will have an article with the pictures. And if you're on my mailing list, I'm going to send out an email also with those pictures. If you want to get on my mailing list, just send me an email at naturalolympia@gmail.com. So very excited that we have our fitness winners for the summer. Now I'm going to do another fitness challenge. It's going to start in 2 more weeks. So it will be at the end of September, which will be September 28th, right before October. And it's going to go all the way up till Christmas, which will be December 21st. So that'll be the 12-week period, September 28th to December 21st. And if you're interested in joining that, just send me an email at naturalolympia@gmail.com. We're going to have the information and the sign up on my John Hansen Fitness website this week, so you can check it out there. All right. So let's get to some of our emails from the Rick Drayson tribute. I thought it went really well. We got Jerry Branham and Bill Grant back together. These guys have been friends for like 50 years, and they were friends with Rick. I did put it also up on my YouTube channel, so I got some comments on my YouTube channel as well. But on my Facebook page, Thomas Shaw said, "Very sad. I never met Rick, but I enjoyed what he shared online." Curtis Young said, "I always liked watching Rick's Corner." Fernando Pena said, "Massive blow to the bodybuilding community of legends. Thankfully, because of this new era of technology, we can forever see and listen to his stories and advice way into the future. My condolences to all that knew him, a true brother in iron. I have no doubt he's already squatting and pressing his ass off in the most glorious of gyms alongside those we have lost in the past. Never to be forgotten. Respect, brother." The great Lee Haney, Mr. Olympia, 8-time Mr. Olympia, said, "Awesome tribute, John. I love both Bill and Jerry, icon in the sport." Timothy Turpin said, "I loved his collaboration videos with Piana. So sad." Moisey Richards said, "Rick was a class act." Russell B. said, "Thanks for doing this, John Hansen. He seemed like a great guy to have known." And Mike Glass from California said, "There will never be another Rick Drayson. See you on the other side." And I also got a couple more comments here. Ross Achilles said, "Awesome." And Tom Kirshner said, "I enjoyed hearing his stories of the early days at Gold's Gym when Arnold and the others were beginning their careers." And I just put it up on YouTube today, and I got a lot of comments. I almost got 1,000 views already, so that's pretty good for my channel. If you're interested in going to my YouTube channel to check out these interviews, just go. It's under my name, John Hansen. and I'm putting up all the Bodybuilding Legends podcast up on YouTube so you can see the video as well. Waheed said on YouTube, he said, "I still have your autographed golds and worlds gear, Rick. May the gods feed you honey. Rest in peace, big fella. Thank you much, John." Randall said, "John, you and Rick had epic interviews together. Rest in peace, Rick Drayson." George said, "I'm praying Bill Pearl will come on John's show. I wouldn't count on Arnold. Let's see if I'm wrong." Paul Williams said, "I miss you, Rick. Rest in peace, brother." Ronan said, "Great tribute show, guys. I actually found your own podcast through Rick's Corner, John." George said, "Two great gentlemen. Thank you so much, John. You're the best." Lada Boito said, "I laughed so hard listening to these two guys talk about Rick Drayson and reminisce. Those kind of memories are priceless and should be shared." Gary said, "Bill and Jerry have a lot of good stories all on their own. Great interview." Theron said, "Rick wanted an interview with Arnold. I only hope Arnold feels bad." Dirty Nasty said, "Rest in peace, Rick. OG Golden Age GOAT. I'm crowning him the best to ever do it. Thank you for all you've given us with your knowledge on Rick's Corner. We love you, Rick. Now you're pain-free training with Ed Corney and Franco Colombo in heaven. Rest in paradise." Odessophile said, "I really enjoy your videos, John. Regarding Jerry Branham, I have read the magazine since 75, 76, and I remember reading his articles over the years. I actually met Bill Grant when he competed at a pro show in Toronto in 1980, along with Chris Dickerson, Steve Davis, the late Don Ross, the late Ray Mensur, and the late Dennis Tinerino. I have a photo with Bill Grant, and I remember how friendly and gracious he was." Rampage said, "Jerry should be Rick's successor. He'd be a phenomenal interviewer." Justin said, "I definitely look forward to seeing a new video from Rick. He will be missed." Tony Ruggiero said, "He was a true artist. He also played guitar, videos, drawings. Such a creative, positive guy. He will be greatly missed." Bill McDonald said, "Great tribute, great stories." And that was it. All right. So thank you all you guys for sending me emails about the show. If you want to send me any more emails, send it again to naturalolympia@gmail.com. And again, if you want to check out those videos, they are on my YouTube channel under John Hansen. All right. That is all I got. So here is our interview with Vinny Galante, where we're going to talk about his career in bodybuilding and getting his pro card, and also how Vinny had to change up his training as he got into his 50s, which was really interesting. So here we go. Welcome to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have a very special guest with me today, Mr. Vinny Galante. And Vinny is an old school bodybuilder, and he has been competing for a long time. He's a professional bodybuilder, still competing. Vinny, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John, for having me. Really appreciate it.
All right. Well, Vinny, let's start at the very beginning, like we usually do.
Sure.
Tell us like how you got into bodybuilding, what age you were, and what was your motivation?
So, believe it or not, I grew up in Jersey City, New Jersey, mm-hmm. and there were these two girls. I was about 15, 16 years old, and there were these two girls who did bodybuilding. Nobody knew what it was, and I would joke with them and said, I would just come out and go, "I'm going to be a bodybuilder one day," and they would laugh at me. And I would say, "No, seriously, I'm going to be a bodybuilder. I want to do that." That's the first time I ever heard of bodybuilding. Okay. I didn't even know if I was serious at the time or if I was just full of testosterone and trying to hit on them. I don't remember, but I just remember being a jerk and uh-huh. saying to them, "I'm going to be a bodybuilder." And then, you know, my dad brought home some weights. I think I was about 15 or 16. It's really close in that time frame. And they were the metal weights where you had the little red clamp and a yeah. little metal thing, and you twist it hard, you know, tighten the handles right. up, the dumbbells. And I think I was doing dumbbell presses or flies, and it came apart, and the weights fell on my face. Yeah, he got rid of them real quick, and he brought home a solo flex machine. Okay. I don't know if anybody would remember that.
Yeah, but I remember that.
It was ahead of its time, and they were ahead of its time in the sense of they had resistance bands. And so each band was a different resistance, and it would go up, I think, from 5 pounds up to 100 pounds in resistance. And I worked out on that for a while until I found out that my next-door neighbor was the grandfather to Billy Schultz, who owned Billy's Gym in Bayonne, New Jersey.
Hmm.
And I wanted to go there so bad, and my father wouldn't let me. I was too young, and me and my friend Dino Nerney would take the bus every day to Bayonne during this time to attend karate classes.
Okay.
And we would take karate, and it was okay. It wasn't my thing.
Yeah.
One day I walk out of the gym, and every time I've been in this karate school, I never saw Billy's gym across the street. And I was like, oh my God, that's Billy's right there. And how did we never see it before? And we both walked across the street. I walked in. This was like September, October of 1983.
Okay.
And I just fell in love with the sound of the cast iron weights and the smell of the rubber on the floor and just the whole, you know, I could still smell it, you know, the old fashioned wooden paneling on the walls and
right.
just guys just cranking it out. And
how old were you at this time, Vinny?
I was, I don't want to say 16.
Okay.
I was about 16.
Okay.
And walked in there and they wouldn't let me work out because they said you had to be 18.
Okay.
And I talked to my father. I said, if you sign a waiver, I can go there. And he's like, yeah, I'm not doing that yet. You just stay home, work out in the basement, you're going to be fine. So I lied to him and told him that I was going to continue going to karate. And I walked into Billy's instead. And I lied to them. And I said, I'm 18. And they let me train. They didn't even ask any questions. Billy didn't ask me anything. I worked out. And fast forward to, I think it was February or March of 1984, with like 3 weeks of preparation, all the guys were training for the Mr. Hudson County. It was a non-sanctioned event. This was when AAU was popular and the NPC was still growing. It was still kind of new.
Yeah.
I think in 84, it was only like 3 or 4 years under the belt. I think 81 was the first year of the Nationals, right?
Yeah.
81. So I said, yeah, I'm going to compete. And I went and competed in the teenage division. It was then that they found out my real age of 16. but they were cool with me and they let me stay. I took dead last in the teenage division.
Yeah.
I was not ready to compete. I had no business competing. But I had fun and I enjoyed it. The kid who won, I can't remember his name, this kid Billy took me under his wing. He won the Jersey Cup in 1983. And he taught me a little bit about eating and getting five meals in and the difference between protein and carbs. Mm-hmm. And there was another guy named John who took me under his wing and taught me the difference between weight training and bodybuilding training. And he was a powerlifter. And he taught me all the basics of the squat, bench, and deadlift. And so I got a great tutorial, in a sense, right from the get-go with learning how to diet from the bodybuilders and train heavy from the powerlifters.
Okay.
Powerlifting never really did anything for me. I always gravitated towards more moderate lightweight, and that's how my physique rose. But I got the best of both worlds when I first started out, and I wouldn't change that for anything. And I got a chance to, at that time, compete in 1984 on, remember this, under the tutelage of this kid, Billy. He was only 19, and I went on to win my first show, the Jersey Cup. I won that. And at the same time, John Natashak was training for the Nationals.
Yeah.
So I got a chance to watch him train. And to this day, John, we don't see each other often anymore because he's down in Florida. But, you know, he's been a big part of my career. He probably wouldn't realize he is, but he is. He's been a big motivating factor in my early days. Where I got a chance to watch him. I'll never forget one day he was on a preacher curl doing curls, and never forget the size of his arms. It just impressed me. And he had monster arms and monster quads.
That had to be something to see, seeing a guy training for the guy who won the Nationals in the universe, and you're only a kid. So that had to be something to see in person.
Yeah. And I was a kid back then, and all the guys broke my balls, and they teased me a lot. And, you know, I was that kid who had a lot of dreams and aspirations, and they laughed at me.
Did you have a goal of being a professional bodybuilder at this time after you did your first show?
No, I knew nothing about it. I didn't have a clue about it. I just knew I wanted to compete. And I didn't understand why I wanted to compete. I didn't have like, oh, I saw guys in the magazines and I want to be Mr. Somebody. I just knew that I wanted to be a bodybuilder. I had no idea what that meant. And so I continued to work out and train and do some teenage shows. I was fortunate to think I placed fourth in the teenage New Jersey and second in the teenage USA. And then it wasn't until Gus Salerno, who was our chairman in New Jersey. So you're talking about old school now, right? Mm-hmm. So now Gus was the chairman, and I was starting to work in a gym in Jersey City where his wife was working. But at the time, Gus was involved with some stuff, and he was in jail, and I'll leave it at that. And at through jail, Gus would then put my program together every time his wife, Patty, would go visit him. And she'd come back every Monday with a new program because we would do Polaroid pictures. Probably nobody even knows what that is today, right? The kids,
yeah,
young competitors today don't even know what a Polaroid is. So they would do, we would do Polaroid pictures. She'd go on a Friday. She'd come back on a Monday with a new program. And the show today is called the Kemper Classic, but formerly it was known as the Suburban Bodybuilding Championships. And I went into that in 1989. And I would say that was my first real prep in 1989. I would say from soup to nuts, where I followed off-season program right to the day of the contest. And,
Okay, yeah.
So I went into it, and I won the middleweight and the overall with the help of, I would say, my first coach, which was Gus Salerno. And
wow.
he was in jail at the time. And it was a great story, right?
Yeah.
So
now, how old were you at that show, Vinny?
I think I was 89, 20, 21.
Okay, so 20. You're out of the teenage.
Yeah. I was, this is okay. My first men's show. But I went into the novice. I won the middleweight and the overall. And that was, it was kind of cool because at the time we had a magazine called MTI, Muscle Training Illustrated.
Yeah, Dan Laurie.
And I was grateful that I got into the magazine. And I remember somebody I knew got me in the magazine. It was a girl I knew, and her mom worked for the magazine for Dan Laurie.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, and they gave me some weird nickname. I can't remember what it was. And it stuck for like 2 years. I was like, I was like really weird. I didn't want to be, I think it was like, oh, Jersey Thunder or something like that.
Oh, okay.
This Jersey Thunder was coming out of nowhere and he's beating everybody. And I was like, that's not me. That's not that. Cause I'm a low key guy.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be known as that. So I just, you know, progressed throughout the years and just was fortunate that I was able to meet some really good people in the beginning. After 89, I was going to, Hudson County Community College. My father wanted to hear nothing of it that I didn't, you know, you got to go to school. And I was like, Dad, I don't want to go to school. I want to be a bodybuilder. And he's like, you could be whatever you want, but first you got to go to school. So my grades weren't that great. And I wasn't a great student. I probably had ADHD or something like that. And I'm dyslexic. So it takes me a billion years to read a book. But I just never gravitated towards, you know, scholastic going to school or anything like that. So
right.
I'm blue collar all the way. And I just, my mind doesn't work that way. So I went through for 2 years, and at the end of the 2 years, that's when I did this Suburban.
Okay.
And I won it in 89. And yeah, I was about 20. I said, Dad, I just don't want to go back to school. And he's like, well, at least you did 2 years. You could always come back. And then my bodybuilding career kind of like little bit took off after that. And I got some little sponsors here and there, and then continued training, working. And in 1991, I did the New Jersey Championships for the first time, and I took 10th.
Wow.
And yeah, I took 10th because I'll be the first to admit it. I actually kind of got a big head, and I kind of got cocky, and I thought, I'm going to just win this.
Hmm.
And I got clobbered. I mean, I walked in that show thinking I was going to win it, and I took dead last. I just got destroyed.
Who won the show? Do you remember?
I don't remember. But it was a humbling experience. It was embarrassing. I said, I'll never let that happen again. And I came back the following year, and I won my weight class in 1992. And a week later, I won my first national title at the Junior USA, and that was the first time I went to California.
Wow.
And yeah, and it was kind of cool because, you know, back in the 90s, if you won something from New Jersey or New York or even Florida, when you go to California, you know, and you have, I think Flex Wheeler walked up to me and he said, yeah, man, your name's been kicking around here for a while. I'm like, you heard of me? Wow. I had no idea. I had no idea. And just made connections with, I remember training with Chris Cormier and Tom Prince and Lee Priest a little bit. Paul DeMeo was out there. You know, so I got the chance to hang out with those guys and train. And then I came back.
What did you go to California for? Did you go out just to hang out and meet some people? Or
so when you asked me the question a little while ago about, you know, what did you want to do? Did you want to be a professional bodybuilder?
Yeah.
I had no idea what I wanted to do when I was 16. But as it developed, I started to understand that this was a business. And I would promote myself and market myself. And I would put these little packets together and introduce myself in a letter. And I would send that letter to all of the editors, Muscle Fitness, Flex Magazine, Ironman, Muscle Training Illustrated, Muscular Development. I would just send them to all of them. Right. And nobody would ever contact me back. And I just looked at it as a way to get my name out there. And, you know, we didn't have social media. We didn't have emails. We had nothing. Right. How are these people going to know who I am? And then I met, he was an actor. His name is slipping. He used to go to the Night of Champions all the time.
Okay.
Gregory.
Gregory
passed away.
Gregory Hines.
Who?
Gregory Hines.
Gregory Hines. He was a big fan of bodybuilding.
Yeah.
I remember going to a show. I don't think it was the Night of Champions yet, but he said he saw me compete in a local show because he was a big fan, and he put his arm around me and he said, "My young man, you have to look at this as a business and you have to make the right contacts." And it was just like small little talk like that. We're talking to Gregory Hines for 3 minutes. And I just went to work and I said, I'm going to make sure these people know who I am. Wow. And I'm going to make sure not only are they going to know who I am because I'm writing to them, but I'm going to win titles.
Yeah.
I got to win titles. You know, as I say to guys, young guys today, they're on social media and you see this all the time. All right. That's really great. And I joke around a lot in some of my posts about having a lot of likes and a lot of followers. And that's great, but what is that doing for you? And if you have a company that wants you to promote them for free and only have them give you free product, you're only making that company rich. You're not doing anything for yourself.
Right.
At the end of the day, you want money in your pocket. If you're going to do this, I want to get paid for this. I want cash in my pocket.
Right.
So I was like, well, how do I do that? And one thing led to another, and I got like little sponsorships here and there. You know, I was fortunate also that I backed up my talk because I got 4 national titles under my belt during the 90s where I won the Junior USA, I won the Junior Nationals, I won the USA, I was a top 5 competitor in the Nationals. And, you know, and along the way, I met a lot of cool people, a lot of old school people. You know, I watched Flex Wheeler train. So to answer you, go back for a second, to answer your question, what was I doing out in California? I would invest the time where I would pay my own way. I'd stay out there for a week or two and just train out in Gold's, meet all the photographers, make contacts. And then every time I did the Nationals, I would invest in myself, go out to the California, out to Gold's in Venice, and I would stay there for a few days, contact all the photographers ahead of time and say, I'm going to be out there, and I would do photo shoots. I would just do all these photo shoots from probably, you know, Monday to Thursday, right after the Nationals. And I looked at the Nationals as a means, if I didn't win it, I was at least getting some good exposure. And, you know, then I'd go home and I'd go back to Strong and Shapely Gym where I was training. And the other guys would be like, why the hell is he getting all this publicity and why is he getting all this exposure? I'd be like, hey, I'm making the moves. I'm spending my own money to do this and it's going to pay off. That's how I looked at it. I looked at it as an investment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You're talking about a time in bodybuilding where the magazines were the big thing, you know, to make the magazines was huge, but in order to make the magazines, you had to win titles. Like you said, you had to be somebody. They're not going to just, not like social media where anybody can go on social media and, you know, broadcast himself. You had to win titles in order to be in the magazines.
Yeah. And you had a few guys that graced the covers of magazines and had articles that never stepped on stage. It's always been that way. Our sport has always been that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I never had the physique. If you saw me in the off season, you would think like, oh, you look kind of like, like a power lift, like you're a big guy, but I'm a little more thicker in the midsection in the off season. I have to diet really, really hard. And at the end of the day, I'm left, not left in a negative sense, but I end up with a classic looking physique. You know what my physique looks like, small waist.
Right.
So I'm not getting into a magazine just because of what I look like. I knew that I had to get into a magazine. The only way I could get into a magazine is by winning titles. And I remember Sean Ray telling me that after I won the USA, he goes, you can milk this title for the next 3 to 4 years if you play your cards right. And I did. And I did. I did the Nationals after that, and I had a difficult time making the weight class, the middleweight class, but I still got into the magazines because of that exposure I got from the USA the year before. Yeah. Yeah. And I just parlayed it into every year. I would just make the time. And I made the time to respect the photographers. I got to know them. I got to know what they liked. You know, if one particular photographer liked, the one in particular, I'm not going to mention his names, but because it's not a bad thing, but he liked cans of Budweiser. I literally would bring a couple of cans, two cases. I would bring actually, not two cases, two six packs of Bud to a photo shoot when I would do it with him. And he would sip on them and he'd be saying so thankful for it.
Yeah,
another photographer I knew liked crumb cake, and I would bring him a cake. And he'd be like, nobody does this. I would, yeah, but I want to make sure that you know that when I'm coming, we're going to have a good session and I'm going to do good work for you. I want to look good in the magazines.
Right.
And, you know, because John, you know, it was different back then. I could call up a photographer like Irvin Gelb. He was one of the best. I would shoot with him all the time. And I call Irvin, hey, Irvin, I'm coming out this week. And he'd be like, okay, let's set it up for this day and this time.
Yeah.
And then he would then sell the pictures to the magazines. So I was able to do an actual photo shoot. And then if I got on the cover or got in the feature, I'd get paid on it. But today, I laugh at it a little bit. Like, these competitors are like, yeah, I just did a photo shoot. No, you didn't. You paid a photographer to put pictures together that right. will never get into a magazine.
Right.
Now, on the other hand, you could say, oh, but you did the same thing. You paid your way to go to California. Yeah, I did, but I knew I was getting in a magazine.
Right.
I knew I was getting featured. And and those features led me to travel around the world, which I don't see happening with a lot of competitors today.
Back you up a little bit. You said the 1 year you went into the jersey and you got only 10th. What year was that, 91?
That was 91, yeah.
Okay, so then you came back the next year and you were much improved. And
yeah, in 91, that was I did the jersey, and the Junior Nationals was also in New Jersey, and I did that, and I got a chance to see Paul DeMeo, Kevin Lerone, okay. and all those guys, and it was yeah, like, oh my God, good. That was like another world to me.
Yeah.
I was like, I thought I was good, and I see these guys, it was another level, and I thought I had taken my training and my nutrition serious, and I realized I didn't. You know, I just applied myself the whole year. I was just like laser-like focus. And it was prestigious back then to win the Mr. New Jersey, the New Jersey State Championships. It was prestigious.
Yeah.
Because it was like an unwritten rule in New Jersey, even in New York. And there was a lot of battles and a lot of animosity between New York and New Jersey. The guys hated each other. We just, one wanted to be the best. Mm-hmm. And there was some nasty, really, really good competitors that came out of New York. And I think that if they weren't there, they wouldn't have brought the best out of the guys in New Jersey and vice versa.
Yeah.
But we all get along, you know, it's all good stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, I just had like laser-like focus for the New Jersey in 92, and I won my class, and this guy, Brian Nixon, won the overall. He was just untouchable that day. Mm-hmm. And Derek Whitsett, rest his soul. He's not with us anymore. He won the light heavyweight class. Then I went on to win the Junior USA a week later. So mm-hmm. it was a good week.
Wow. So you won your class in the Junior USA that same year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then I won the USA in 93. And in 94, 95, I was having a difficult time making the middleweight class. Up until this point, I never had I never even thought of a weight class. I would just train for a show and I would just either top five or win my class and win overalls. I never had a problem making a weight class until the 94 Nationals. When I was about 180 pounds, about 5 days out, and I was like, oh, what do I do now to get down to 176? I never experienced this before. I came into the contest a little flat, and I thought I did things wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. It was just that I grew and I needed to make the weight class and I didn't know how to do it.
Right.
Fast forward, 95, same scenario. You would think like, oh, now you have experience, but I never really even thought, oh, a weight class? I never thought of it. Hmm. So I remember I was out in California doing photo shoots. I was out there for a while this time. I was out there for in 96 or 95. I was out there probably like for a couple months and I got a chance to talk to Chris Cormier a lot and Sean Ray, and Chris had suggested to not compete at all in 1996. And, you know, I was thinking, hey, I'm on a roll a little bit. Maybe they're going to forget about me. And he's like, it doesn't work that way. You got a good name. You need to get back to the drawing board and not worry about a weight class. And now just focus on being a light heavyweight. So I did that. And in 1997, I went back. I don't want to say backwards, but I kind of took a step back. I went to the Junior Nationals first. Hmm. And I won my weight class there as a light heavyweight. And then went to the Nationals right after that, and I took fourth. And that was my first year as a light heavy, and I cracked the top five, or you know, top four in the Nationals as a light heavyweight.
Okay. Yeah, back then, that's when everybody used to do the Junior USA, Junior Nationals, before they went to the USA or the Nationals, because everybody had a, you know, you had to prove yourself at the national level, so you would always
Go
to Junior shows first, right?
Yeah, it was nasty back then. The guys just brought a different level of conditioning. I'm not mocking or taking away anything from the competitors today, but you know, like what Dorian Yates said about Brandon Curry, that he wouldn't have made the top six in his day. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of guys today that wouldn't have made the top five in the Nationals back in the 90s. I think things are different today. I think they diet different. We suffered a lot more. You know, we did things to really get our skin super thin. I'm not sure what they do today. You know, the condition I brought at the Masters Pittsburgh Pro last year, a lot of people were like, you know, what the hell was it? How did you get that hard and grainy at 53 years old? And I'm like, because I'm from the 90s and I had a diet.
Right.
You know?
Hey, let me take you back to that 93 USA, because that was, I think, like you said, that was the one that really brought you out. And I remember seeing that show on ESPN, because ESPN used to cover the shows. And I think they did like a little side piece on you too, right? Didn't they go to your gym? And they showed you training at the gym and stuff too?
Lou Zwick from American Sports Network. I worked with him a lot back then, and I got to get on TV like almost every Saturday. It was awesome. Okay. Yeah, it was great, man. You know, and again, all the things that I did leading to that, all the things that I did up to that point in the sense of, you know, making contacts with the photographers and the magazines really skyrocketed me in the sense of like being on covers and features. Got me to work with American Sports Network and getting on ESPN.
Yeah.
And yeah, they did features on me and everything. And then for the USA, they did a big feature on me. And that was just cool. No.
Yeah. I still remember that to this day. So when you were getting ready for that 93, you already won your class in 92 at the Junior USA. So now you're getting ready for the USA Championships. Did you have that mindset like going in all year long? Like, I'm going to take this. I'm going to win. This is going to be my big breakthrough.
There's an old video in one of the Olympias of Rich Gaspari, and he was saying, I got to go into a show 100%. If I don't win, I'm going to die. Mm-hmm. And I lived and breathed anything Rich Gaspari said back then. You know, he was another Italian guy from Jersey.
Right.
And, you know, I had the mindset, I will die training for this contest. And I don't mean that literally in a sense, but, you know, and I don't mean overdoing anything or, you know, I just had tunnel vision that when I trained for a contest and I had a period where I was off and I had a lot of bad placings in my earlier career, in my pro career, but I was just distracted and I was burnt out at the time. It took me 16 years to turn pro. And then after I got my pro card in 08, I was done. I mentally was just checked out, but I wanted to do some pro shows and I was off. But for the most part, when I train for a contest, I don't care who's in it. You're going to have a hard time beating me. And I didn't win every show I went into, but I had the mentality that I'm going to win this thing. And whoever beats me, he's got to look nasty to beat me. I'm not going to make it easy for anybody. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I don't remember his name, but he was a a competitor from New York, and he said to me one day, he said, "Man, when I see your name on the list, it's just, you're a fucking headache." So I was like, all right, I know I'm accomplishing what I need to accomplish. You know, I know that I'm scaring the shit out of people before the show even starts. And yeah. I don't get intimidated easily. I believe in myself. I have a lot of confidence. And at one point I lost all my confidence and it took me a little while to regain it. And, you know, it shows in, you know, winning last year, you know, and at 53, I'm still loving this, John. I really enjoy it. I think you and I had talks a while back talking about diet. And, you know, I was like, I had my head up my ass for a little while. I was burnt out and I was just, you know, I think we all go through that one period of time in our lives when in bodybuilding, we think there's that secret.
Yeah.
And I think you and I talked and I said, you know, I was looking for some, like, looking for something. And I think I got the same answer from you and somebody else. Like, dude, just get back and get your head straight. And
yeah,
it took me a little while. Yeah. Because I was on a losing streak after I turned pro in 08. I really was just burnt out. I didn't have, he's a good guy, but he was a bad training partner. And he thought he was doing me justice in the sense of like making the workouts harder than they needed to be. Mm. And it was a bad year training. I was burnt out by the time I got to my pro debut, which was the Pittsburgh Pro. I don't even know what I placed in that fifth or sixth. I don't even know if I made the top five. Then the New York Pro, I took sixth, but I did beat Jose Raymond. it can happen now. And then it just was one failure after another. And I tried harder and I was trying harder. And when in reality was, I should have just probably taken a good solid year or 2 years off, but yeah. I was 41 or 42 when I turned pro. And I thought that I don't have enough time. I don't have any time to relax right now. I have to do this. And that was the wrong mindset. And now that I'm 53, I feel like, hey, we had a pandemic this year. No problem. I just extended my off season. And I'm a lot fuller now and I'm bigger than I was last year. I'm harder and I'm in better shape. And going into 2021, I haven't decided on what I want to compete in.
Yeah.
But John, you know, I have to say that in 2013 was my last contest. It was the New York Pro and it was my worst ever placing, condition, presentation, everything. And I have to redeem myself. I would love to go back to New York Pro, but I'm not sure what I'm doing yet because this whole COVID thing, we don't know. Will the New York Pro be in May next year? What you know, how is this going to happen with the New York Pro being tomorrow?
Right.
Will it be in May? But I do definitely 100%. I will be doing a 212 contest before I focus just on Masters. Cause I know for lack of a better term, my road right now should be just Masters, but before I get too old, I want to crank out one more 212 show. I want to see how I could do against these young guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, but again, I will train for it like I'm going to win the damn thing.
Yeah.
That'll be my attitude. My mentality will be like, no, I'm going to win it. But I also can turn it off when I'm on stage and respect the fact if these guys are better. I know that. I'm not stupid.
Right.
I have a lot of respect for the sport. I love the Federation. They're doing nothing but great things right now. We're trying to get all the shows lined up for all the pros that are competing. I wouldn't want to be a promoter right now. I'd be stressed out.
Right. Do they still have Masters Pro events?
Yeah. Tim Garner has the Hurricane Pro.
Okay.
Gary Udit this weekend is the Masters Pittsburgh Pro.
Oh, he holds and, the pro with the amateurs, right?
Yeah, they have the pros with the amateurs. Chris Mines has the Legion in October.
Okay.
And Rich Singleman has the Baltimore Pro Masters.
Oh, okay.
And I believe the California Pro also had the Masters California Pro, but with the COVID, they removed it from the schedule.
Okay.
So there are a couple of shows to pick and choose from.
Let's go back and talk about your training and your diet, because I'm sure it's evolved since you were a teenager. But, like, let's go up to the early 90s when you were, like, going to these national-level shows. What kind of training were you doing? Like you said, the heavy training really doesn't work for you. You go more light and moderate, right?
Right. I knew from an early age that when I would get under a bench press, my shoulders would just hurt. My elbows would hurt. But when I would pick up a dumbbell, I wouldn't feel it in a negative way. I would get a tremendous pump in my chest.
Okay.
So I never followed the like, oh, you must do this. You have to do this. I just did my own thing, and I knew that a 12 to 15 rep range would work for me. And I knew that isolation works best for me in the beginning of a workout, and compounds work at the end of a workout, which is the opposite of what you're taught.
Yeah.
You know, I could end my workout on the bench press with, you know, 185 pounds for four sets of 12 super slow reps instead of trying to go from 135 to 315. That wouldn't work for me. But if I could grab 185 at the end of the workout and just squeeze everything and just work slow, I get a great pump and my chest would be full and round. And, you know, I never like would jump on the bandwagon of like, no, I got to lift a lot of weight. And did I lift heavy weights here and there? Absolutely. Like we all have. But for the most part, my training has always been more moderate weight with 12 to 15 rep range. And high volume too works really, really well for me. But
when you say high volume, how many sets per body part?
I could do anywhere from 16 to 25 sets.
Okay.
And I'm the kind of guy who grows when I go into a show when I'm dieting. I'm not saying I'm Kevin Lavrone. I'm not saying that. But I'm like a Kevin Lavrone in the sense of I respond way better training for a contest than in the off season. Off season, my waistline is a little bit thicker. My shoulders are a little more narrower. And then when I start to diet, my waist comes down, my shoulders come out, I get more fuller and rounder. So, you know, I know that. And it's, you know, we all play head games with ourselves, right? When we look at each other, when we look at ourselves and go, I can't be ready for a show. And it's 4 months from now. We all do that.
Right.
But you know what, John, since now what I've learned, I keep my rep scheme really low. Around between 6 and 8 reps in the beginning of all my exercises. So let's say for conversation's sake, I'm going to do a dumbbell incline chest press. All of my sets will be 6 to 8 reps.
Okay.
And then when I know I'm going to go into my work, I call it my working sets now. That's when I use a 12 to 15 rep range. You might think like, oh, 6 to 8 reps is like a waste of time. But for me, I'm dealing with a few things. I had rotator cuff surgery on my right shoulder. I have 9 screws here, and I have 5 screws on this shoulder. So I got to warm up really good. And I noticed that as we've gotten older, and this applies, I think, to a lot of guys over 40, over 50, that when we're younger, when we go to train, we can feel the muscle regardless of the weight. We can feel the muscle. But as we're older now, especially for me, so I'm going to say that I think a lot of guys should be thinking of this, that you need a lighter weight and you need to flush the muscle and focus on getting that muscle engorged with blood before you start increasing the rep range and the weights. Because for me, when I pick up a weight that I used to use 20 years ago, I feel it in my tendons and my ligaments first.
Yeah.
So I'd rather go a little lighter. I train actually a little lighter than I used to, but then I actually end up training heavier now than I did years ago, which is kind of weird, right?
Yeah, that's interesting. So you pump up the muscles first, and you're protecting the tendons and the joints and everything, getting the muscles engorged with blood. And then when you got that great pump going, then you go a little heavier with weight, which is going to stimulate the muscle growth.
Yeah, and I think it's given me a fuller, rounder look that I've never had before in the off season. And I'm really, really paying attention to my nutrition this time. Am I going to lie? I'm not going to lie to you and tell you that I don't eat cake every once in a while and have some pizza.
Sure.
But for the most part, my nutrition is better than it's ever been. I have a renewed energy and a renewed sense of a newfound respect for bodybuilding again. And the one gripe I will say is that I won the over 40 and the over 50 Masters Pittsburgh Pro last year. And then 3 weeks later, I win the over 50 the Hurricane Masters. And then okay, nobody really, all right, that's nice. Vinny Galante came back and he won those shows, right? But then there's these guys who are over 50, not even cracking the top 5 in the 212s, and they're talking about like they're the best 50-year-olds. That pisses me off because those guys didn't step on stage with me in a Masters show, but because they did okay in a 212, they're all of a sudden they're great over 50 guys. I'm not, no disrespect towards them, but it's the media that pisses me off that says, like what? Because I'm in the Masters division. You don't pay any attention to us. Mm-hmm. So I hope that with the name that I carry, I hope to help the promoters build on the Masters shows in the next few years. I hope that that could be something I could help in the sport, because I'm fresh and I'm still wanting to do it. But I also do know it would be extremely challenging for me to win a 212.
Yeah.
So I know I'm realistic about where I should be,
yeah.
But ego wise or passion wise, to redeem myself from 2013, I need to do one 212 show before I 100% focus on the Masters division, because I'm not done competing. I really enjoy it. I love it.
Yeah. So after you get done with the Masters, you're going to go into the Open 212?
No. Well, my next contest will be a 212.
Okay.
And what I'm saying is I want to get that out of my system. I want to do the best I can, and okay. Then I will focus solely on Masters. I already know I can win in the Masters. I've already done it. So.
Yeah. Okay. So when you were trying to get your pro card, Vinny, you had that breakthrough with the 93 USA, but that you couldn't get your pro card from that. Because only Chris Cormier got his pro card that year, right? The guy who won the overall.
Yeah, well, back in the 90s, in the USA, the overall winner was the only person who got a pro card.
Right.
And in the Nationals, you had to win your weight class, and you weren't automatically a pro. They had to approve it, if you remember that.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah. Like, there's some bantamweight guys who weren't okay to get their pro card.
Oh.
Yeah. So, in my era, you had to win to turn pro.
Yeah.
I was just having a conversation about Danny Hester just the other day. So our gym's just opened in here in New Jersey on Tuesday. And this kid comes up to me, a young guy. He goes, hey, I saw a cover with you and Danny Hester. And we started talking. I said, yeah, I've been on a couple of covers with Danny Hester. And he said something about, oh, yeah, he got his pro card the easy way. I said, how did he get his pro card the easy way? He goes, yeah, you know, I want to be old school. I want to win. He took second place at the Nationals. Mm. So I stopped for a second. I said, if you took second place at the Nationals, I doubt that you could win the Classic Olympia. So let's be realistic here. It doesn't matter how you get your pro card. It only matters what you do with it. And Danny Hester has done phenomenal with this pro card. He's got a few pro wins, and he's the first Mr. Olympia in the Classic division.
Right.
And, you know, these new guys today act like they could do better. Like, I just think it's like a joke.
Right. So how long did it take you to get your pro card then, Vinny?
16 years.
16 years, wow. Because that was just because you had to go in the Nationals, then you went up a weight class, and it was just tough competition, right?
It was very hard. I mean, I went against guys who were just completely nasty. And I think early on, my legs didn't catch up to my upper body. I think my upper body was growing a little bit faster than my legs.
Okay.
But I always had great lines, and I had to position my legs a certain way to make them look bigger.
Right.
It's taken me a long. My legs started growing more now than I had them years ago.
Hmm.
Yeah, because I changed my train. I've changed everything, John. I train differently. I train my legs completely different than what I used to. I do a lot of Bulgarian split squats now. And believe it or not, squats don't really do anything for me.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I'm able to train on a belt squat, that tension of having the weight between my legs, instead of having the weight on my back and having to push up in that sense with a regular squat, I do mostly more belt squats than I do with a regular squat.
Hmm.
And I think my legs have grown. And there's a lot of, like, you know, people out there say over 40, over 50, you're starting to lose your legs.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of guys do lose their legs because they don't change their training.
Hmm.
And I think going back to what I was saying before, and you know what? Whoever's watching this could say out loud to themselves, what he's saying right now is all bro science. And it's so it may be. And I'm not saying anything here that's coming from a book. I'm just talking about just how the body operates after it gets beat up for 35 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And right now, my body's beat up, so I have to change my training to accomplish what I want to accomplish.
Right.
And so I've changed my training to a lot of sets are in the 6 to 8 rep range, and then I do two extra sets at the end where they're much heavier and they're 12 to 15 reps. My body's growing again. I've never done Bulgarian split squats before until this last year and a half. And I got that one. I owe that one to Evan Santapani. He wrote about it.
I just heard an interview with Evan on Jose's show, and he said he does those.
Yeah, well, he wrote about it a while back. Okay. I don't know where I read it, but I said, oh, Bulgarian split squats, what did I? And then I'm like, oh, that's the exercise all the girls do. Yeah, and then I saw John Meadows doing them with 80-pound dumbbells, and I'm like, there's got to be something here. And my quads just blew up after doing them.
Wow.
Blew up. My hamstrings just, they hang now, like, you know, almost in a 3D dimension. And if you go on my Instagram, I've posted a couple of pictures on Vinny_Galanti_. You'll see my Instagram. You'll see my pictures. I'm just loving what I'm doing again.
Yeah.
I enjoy this again. You know, it's a pleasure.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what year did you finally get your pro card then, Vinny? In the
2000s? 2008.
2008, okay. And then did you go right into the pros or did you take time off? Or?
No, I went, like I said earlier, I went right into the pros. I should have taken some time off.
Yeah.
I thought I was rushed in a sense that I had to get some pro shows in me.
Yeah.
I thought I only have maybe 3 years left and my body's not going to work anymore because that's what they were telling me.
Right.
Oh, you're in your 40s. You don't have any time. And there was no pleasure in it. There was no – I didn't enjoy it. And I was training against the grain. I was stressed out. I was tired. And every contest that I failed in, I just tried harder and harder for the next one. And it wasn't smarter. And harder didn't mean it was better. It was just – I was not training smart at all. I didn't give myself a lot of rest. I was just coming in flat, and I had a lethargic look to my whole physique. My face was tired. Mm-hmm. I look at some of the pictures, and I'm like, oh, man, I had bags under my eyes. I didn't look good.
Yeah.
I wasn't unhealthy or anything. I was just tired, very tired. And then I just decided – I heard Bob Chicarillo announce that Jason Arntz was retiring when we were going on stage. And I'm like, you know what? I'm done too. And I told Bob, announce my retirement. And that was it. And I just walked away from the sport, and I thought I'd never compete again.
Yeah.
And I got into, you know, I was very fortunate to be with Universal Nutrition Animal for 18 years.
Wow.
So I knew a lot of the power lifters. I made friends with all of them, especially with Andre Skiba. And Andre has a gym in Carteret, New Jersey, and I contacted him. And he trained me for a few powerlifting meets.
Hmm.
And I got that out of my system. I was done with it. I'm not a powerlifter. I just wanted to try it. I wanted to do something different.
Yeah.
And I had a little success with it. I did two meets, and I won both of them. I think I made 1,000 pound in total. It was kind of cool. So did that. Got that out of my system. I thought, now I'll never compete again. Never doing this again. You know. And then one day I was doing dumbbell bench presses, and I had them locked out and dislocated and tore right off.
Oh, man.
And yeah, so I needed 9 anchors. You can see the scars I got. You can see them a little bit.
Not
so
bad.
I got nine holes, 9 anchors to repair this one. They told me I shouldn't put my hand over my head for a year. So that sucked, and rehab sucked. It took me a year to start coming back, and then I was picking up literally like 10-pound dumbbells, and I was coming back, and this one just tore right off.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So it was like almost 2.5 years, 3 years where I wasn't training. I couldn't do anything. I only know one way of getting back into shape. I had no intentions of competing. And I started thinking about, oh, well, I'll train like I'm training for a show. And then 2 weeks before the Baltimore Masters, I decided, hey, I look pretty good. And I did. I did look good, but not to compete. And I went to the Baltimore Masters anyway. And I got clobbered. I took dead last. And then I was like, oh, no way. I can't do this again. I can't end my career like this. 13 sucked now. 2017 sucks. And so I went back to Baltimore and competed again. Took dead last again. I'm like, son of a bitch. So I put the blinders on and I said, what am I doing wrong? And I realized I need to change everything. And the way I stumbled upon changing everything was right after the contest, the New England Patriots were playing. It was a Monday night game, and they did a special on Tom Brady, and they were talking about his age, and he was talking about how he's incorporated different styles of training into his program, how he eats differently, how he can't do the same things anymore. And I'm saying to myself, man, you're a dumbass. And here he is, this guy, he's the top of his game, and he realizes he needs to change. Why don't you realize it? And it just sparked in my head. And I said, you know what? I need to do something different. I took a week off from the gym. I regrouped, and I started to do a lot of research. And I started to research time under tension. And then I started to find articles from Charles Poliquin. Mm-hmm. And then I started to find a lot of videos with John Meadows. And I started to get all these ideas like, all right, let's try time under tension. And it's time under tension, if done properly and correct, is one of the most pain in the ass things to do in the gym. Because when you're training with time under tension and you're going super slow and making sure everything's getting a squeeze, you have to have a lot of patience for that, because we like to go in and train. And to us, training is like putting some weights up and, you know, moving weight, right?
Right.
The time under tension is like a lot different. And then I started to get stronger and stronger, and I started to feel, oh, hey, I can handle heavy weight and I could still go slow.
Mm-hmm.
Then I started to incorporate the German volume method, 10 by 10. And I was reading a lot about Vince Guaranda and how his methodology. And I started to just to apply all this stuff. And next thing I know, I'm starting to grow and I'm starting to look like the old Vinny. My waistline was coming down, my shoulders getting wider, legs and everything. And I see a video, or I don't know what it was, a video or an article with Evan Sentapani with Bulgarian split squats. And I started adding those in. I'm like, holy shit, these fucking hurt. And I'm looking at John Meadows, his Bulgarian split squats and the 8-second hold at the bottom. And I'm like, I'll be damned. I'm gonna die going into this contest. I got to win this thing. And I got my old mindset back. I can't train unless I'm going to die doing this. And I just was all tunnel vision last year. I didn't talk to anybody. I didn't return people's texts. I didn't call anybody. I was a hermit. I just lived, ate, slept, shit bodybuilding for the last 12 weeks. Well, actually the whole year. But the last 12 weeks, it was like on. And I just disappeared from the planet. And nobody knew where I was. I went to a different gym. I went to a gym. Nobody knew me. I would put my hood on. I was that jerk in the gym with the hood and the water bottle and the headphones.
Right.
And, you know, that guy. I was that guy for 3 months. And it paid off. And I won two shows in one night.
Wow. That's awesome. So explain to our listeners what time under tension, how that affects the muscle differently.
Well, for me, first off, I wish that I applied this when I was in my 20s,
okay,
because it would have saved me from having aches and pains now.
Okay.
And, you know, when you're 20, 25, 30 years old, these guys roll their eyes and say, hey, ain't going to happen to me. It's going to happen to you. Because when you're 50 and you still want to train, you're going to be like, oh, my God, my elbows. Oh, it's hurt. But time under tension basically is taking a weight. For me, time under tension is 4 seconds up, 4 seconds down. And each time I'm down, I pause for a second. So everything is under control. Even when I do curls, everything's under control. Even when I squat, however I squat, if I use a machine, the belt squat, a front squats, a bar on my back, it's all super slow.
Okay.
And it takes a little while to get accustomed to, and it also takes a little while to build your strength back up to use some weights that you're used to. Because if you're squatting 315 for 20, and now you try to squat 315 for 8 extremely slow reps, you might only get one set or you're done. It depends on the guy too. Everybody trains differently. I see some guys on Instagram who are getting up in age and they're still training the way they're training, and they're coming up with some injuries here and there, and they're not admitting to the fact that they're getting older. And
yeah,
if I could just go back in time and start at 40 years old and start incorporating all this, just give me 13 years, just bring me back to 40. And I would have not have torn shoulders. I wouldn't have had injuries. Just time under tension is training as slow as you can, controlled as you can, and keeping the muscle moving. Whether you're reading this from a book or if you're listening to this, everybody's body is different. And you have to understand that. I think a lot of people think time under tension is training with super lightweight.
Yeah.
It's not. I think in the beginning you have to use a certain amount of weight to get accustomed to it, but you have to lift a good amount of weight for it to work.
Yeah.
You have to find what works for you and what weight you feel good in.
How does it affect the muscle fibers differently? Because like if you train heavy and you're accelerating it, you know, a heavy weight fast, then you're getting those white muscle fibers and you're exhausting
right.
all the muscle fibers, and that's what's going to create growth. But when you slow it down and you start, you know, doing a time under tension, slow negative, slow concentrics, how does that affect the muscle fibers differently than like a heavy weight using, you know, acceleration?
You're getting deeper into the muscle, John. It's a soreness that it's a deep sore.
So you're still affecting the white muscle fibers, and you're still affecting all those fibers, right?
Correct. Okay. And also too, John, there's periods of time when I don't train this way on purpose, because I always feel like everything works.
Yeah.
Every program works. You have to find what works for you, but then sometimes I think the thing that works for you, you should give it a rest and for maybe 2 or 3 weeks do something else.
Right. Right.
Like I learned in powerlifting about deload, right? You have a deload week.
Yep.
And I apply that in my bodybuilding training now, where I say, okay, instead of going super slow, I'm just going to do normal reps, and I'm not going to try to get a pump. I'm not going to do anything like that. I'm not going to go crazy. And, you know, the week goes by, and I feel like, okay. And then I come back a week later, and I start bringing the intensity back up, and I get a renewed sense of growth, if you will. You know, a new sense of feeling, where – I gave the muscle a little break, not taking a week off in the gym, but I gave it a week off of intensity.
Okay.
You know, I like to answer that more like it's all about intensity to me.
Yeah.
So either you're training with or without intensity, and whether it's heavyweight or lightweight, whatever you want to do, however you want to train, because not everyone's going to try time under tension. They're not going to believe it. But I think that if you go into the gym with intensity, And I know this is a joke too, and I'm sure you see it. Like, too many guys pay attention to their phone more than training.
Yeah.
Do a set, and right away they're grabbing their phone and looking at it.
Yeah.
The other day, I was training legs on Wednesday, and I was kind of laughing to myself because I said, "Well, look at this. The whole leg area, this gym that I train at, has a separate leg area and a separate area with all the benches. Bench press, shoulder press, decline bench, incline. But the room that has the cables, all pin-loaded stuff, all the kids are in there training, thinking they're getting big.
Yeah.
And it's not like the way we were, where we wanted to move some weight when we were kids, you know?
Right.
We want to get under some decent weight, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And it's a different mindset today.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just it's weird to me. It's like I'm in a twilight zone.
I know. I see it all the time, too. Sometimes I'll count how many people are on their phones. You know, like when I'm in between sets, I'll just look around and they're just all like totally.
I get annoyed.
Phones. Yeah.
I get annoyed.
I think all the old school guys get annoyed. I think we're all taking our frustrations out on Facebook and stuff, you know?
Right. Yeah. I walk up to kids. I just tease them. I go, "Hey, your phone doesn't get you big. Put the fuck down." And they look at me like, I'm like, "Oh, I'm dead serious. Put the phone down. Train."
Right. Are you done competing then this year, Vinny?
Yeah, I didn't compete this year at all. I was going to – at first, I was thinking of doing the New York Pro in May, and then right after that, the California Masters. That was my goal. And then everything got changed. And then, you know, New York got pushed to, I think, July.
Yeah.
And then it got pushed to September. And I was like, you know, I don't know if I want to subject myself to what I need to do to get ready for a show when there's a possibility it could get canceled.
Yeah, right.
So I just chose to just, you know, I'm going to continue eating good, and I'm having a better off season because of it.
Mm-hmm.
So in hindsight, you know, this is actually working out better for me.
Yeah. You still look in great shape. You look really lean. I can see the veins in your shoulders.
Oh, they're always there.
Yeah.
So it's all good.
That was your trademark, right? The veins in your shoulders. I remember that.
Yeah, they're always there. I think I have one, like I'm really fat too, so.
Right. It was great talking to you. It was great getting a chance to know about your career. And I love all that stuff you talked about getting older with the training and stuff. That was really interesting.
Yeah, I think we have to respect the fact that, you know, some of the guys who are 40 and over, you have to respect that you're getting older. And you have to – the one thing I want to say, John, is I take 20 minutes to warm up.
Okay.
Every workout. Yeah. 20 minutes, 5 minutes on a bike or 5 minutes on a treadmill just to get the blood flowing. And then if I'm training chest, and let's say I might do the same exercise as a warm-up, but I might pick 20 pounds for dumbbell chest press, just maybe five sets of five.
Okay.
Just loosening everything up.
Yeah.
And then I start warming up into the set. It takes me a little while to warm up, but I'm having better workouts for it. And I'm realizing age is just a number if you play it right.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that, you know, next year I have a good season in the 212s, and you know, I could do some damage there, maybe crack top 5 in a 212 show. That would be fantastic. I hope they don't hold my age against me. Mm-hmm. I don't think they will, but I just want to bring the best that I could be, not just for being 53, but just for being a bodybuilder.
Yeah, that's inspiring. It's inspiring to hear that age is just a number and you're still going strong, and you know, you change things up a little bit and you're still making improvements. That's awesome.
I think a lot of guys can keep going. It's the fact that if you have it up here in the sense of you're driven, you're focused, you're fresh, and you actually want it. Because if you're just going through the paces like I was doing when I first turned pro, you're going to come up short and you're not going to produce a good product. You have to be hungry and you have to respect the age factor and not let it be against you, but make it work for you that, hey, I'm older, I need to train differently. And throw the ego out the fucking window.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit? Nobody cares about you taking 10 minutes to warm up. Nobody cares that you're not benching 315 anymore. Nobody really cares. Only you care. But if you could look in the mirror and go, holy shit, my body is changing and it looks better.
Yeah.
And that's really the bottom line in getting older as a bodybuilder.
Yeah, I'm going to incorporate some of that myself because I'm old school and I'm still training heavy, and you know, I've been lucky. I haven't really injured myself too much, but I think it's definitely good to mix it up like that, you know, and stop using the stuff we've been using when we were younger, you know?
Yeah. Like this coming week in September now, I'm actually going to stick with like an 8 rep range through all my workouts and not push the rep range.
Okay.
You know, I'm going to do something a little different this week. And then
do you do that for a week, or do you do it longer? Do you do like cycles?
It depends. I'm going to see how I feel at the end of the week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because once I feel something, like this week when I did chest, I felt something in this elbow. It was a weird feeling when I was trying to do flies, and I'm like, oh, that's a weird feeling. All right, that's my body telling me, back off.
Yeah.
So you got to listen to it. And that's where the respect comes. You got to respect your body. You got to respect the warm ups. You got to respect your body talking to you. You don't want your body screaming at you. You want it just talking to you. Because when it's screaming at you, that's when an injury is waiting to happen.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Well, John, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for being here, Vinny, and I appreciate it. And we look forward to seeing you progress in your career and keep doing it for the old school guys, right?
Here we go.
All right. Take care. I'll talk to you soon.
All right.
All right, buddy.
All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to Vinny Galante for that interview. And also, I want to thank our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank all of you who donate to the website on Patreon. And if you're interested in doing that, just go to the bodybuildinglegendsshow.com website, which is our official website. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link for Patreon. If you want to do that, I really appreciate you guys. And thank you to all you Patreon donors who are currently contributing to the show. I appreciate your generosity. All right, so that is it for the show. We will be back next week with another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Keep training hard out there, guys. Stay safe, and we'll see you next week. Take care.